Welcome to the Radio Coffee House chat room, sponsored by The Big Day, the ultimate life coaching resource for all eight areas of your life. Here's your host, Robert W. Whipple.
So let me set the scene here. This is going to be a little bit different, but I think it's good stuff to kind of talk about one of our favorite subjects we're going to be talking about today, and that's money. So approximately 30 years ago, Steve, my wife, and I, we moved to Carrollton, Texas, which is a suburb of DFW, in hopes of something better. We were heavily in debt. We owed money to the IRS. Nancy, a lot of money, like obscene amount of money.
Yes.
We had to file for bankruptcy. Let's set the scene there, filing for bankruptcy. And then our finances, to say the least, were in the abyss. I think we had the Guinness Book of World Records of the lowest credit score. And Nancy said, since she was a nurse, she said our finances were on life support. And so you may ask why. And I'm going to say, very simply, dumb, dumber, and dumbest decisions. We made poor choices. So we found a class through our church, and we were looking for some hope. We needed something, and there was a class that was being taught in our church, and the name of the class were Finances Are Fun. And so we thought, well, they haven't been that fun to us, but let's go to the class because we needed something. And what was interesting, it was a 6 weeks class. And we went through the 6 weeks class. We graduated. And so we said, hey, let's go back for a second time. And we liked the class a second time. And lo and behold, we took the class, if my memory serves me correctly, approximately 10 times over the next year and a half. And so I want to say thank you, Don Spear. God used you to change my life, and that was a major impact on my life. But in the meantime, as we were going through this, we met a gentleman that worked with Don Spear, and his name is Steve Wisdom. So here we are today. And so good morning, DFW. Good morning, America. We are speaking live this Saturday morning from the beautiful KLIF studios in Victory Plaza. My name is Robert Whipple, entrepreneur. I have the privilege of working with Southern Painting, which I believe is one of the most successful painting companies in America. I'm also the author of the best-selling book, The Big Day. I am your host of the Radio Coffee House chat room, and our platform is to discuss relevant topics that can help you improve your life. And my co-host, my wife, my second best friend for over 45 years, Nurse Nancy, good morning.
Good morning.
And how are you today, this beautiful Easter weekend?
It's awesome.
It is awesome, wasn't it? Wasn't it a beautiful drive in this morning?
It was very beautiful.
I'm just thinking, wow, this is really awesome. We are so blessed to be a part of this whole thing. And then, of course, we can't forget my good friend, my special guest, I'd say longtime friend, Steve Wisdom, welcome to the Radio Coffee House chat room.
Good morning, Robert and Nancy.
So we're glad to have you. So what is the theme for today? It's one of our favorite subjects, and Nancy talks about this a lot. And it's we're talking about money. And our theme, though, is how to build a solid net worth. I mean, what are the steps in building a solid net worth? I think that's kind of like a good topic to talk about. Mm-hmm. And that's why I've asked Steve to come here. Steve is a certified financial planner. And so take a minute, Steve Wisdom, and tell us a little bit about who you are and about what you're all about.
Well, it may take less than a minute, but anyway, my name is Steve Wisdom. I have a company here locally called S Wisdom Financial, and I am a CFP, as Robert mentioned. And my broker-dealer, which is the firm that I do pretty much all my business through, is a firm outside Boston called Commonwealth Financial Network. And what that probably doesn't mean anything to most people, but what we are is an independent broker-dealer. I'm sure most people have heard of the Merrill Lynch's, the UBS's, the Morgan Stanley's. Those are big wirehouse-type firms that have big operations where they do big corporate debt issuances and IPOs and all that. And Commonwealth is not part of that at all. We're simply we focus all of our efforts on our clients, and which I'm sure a lot of the wirehouse brokers do too. But we don't have any fundraising or a type of issues like that. And so we pretty much stick with getting our clients' investments to grow. And so I've been with Commonwealth since 1989, which I'll get calls from recruiters all the time, and I'll say, well, I've been with them since 89. There's usually dead silence after that, because that's a very, very, very long time to be with a single company. And
that just is not done in the financial world.
No, it's very unusual for that to be. And so anyway, so I have an office just off of Preston Road, south of Beltline, and been there for quite a long time. And just glad to be here this morning with you.
And you're married?
Oh, yes, yes.
That's a crazy story within itself.
Yeah, I was a bachelor, kind of a hapless bachelor for almost 49 years, and the Lord, I had to give up a kidney to get my wife, and that's a joke we say, but I had met my wife back in the 90s, and we went out, and then we finally broke up. And
you both were never married, right?
No, right, never been married.
So you got married when you were?
Almost 49. I was less than a month away from being 49.
So set the scene again. Here he is, a financial planner, certified financial planner. And rolling in the dough, as I would say, and he would say no, but he laughs. But I, you know, Nancy and I, we like to talk about money because, you know, people always say, well, money won't make you happy. But Nancy's, one of Nancy's favorite sayings is what?
You just don't know where to shop.
You just don't know where to shop.
And I like to say it takes the edge off of poverty.
That's good stuff, man. Yeah.
Or Zig Ziglar would say, if money's not important, you'll lie about other things too.
All right, Zig, one of the favorite sayings about money was, you know, and Zig, you know, was always talked about the opportunity to make money. And people brought this up a lot. And he said, well, it's not that important. It's just next to oxygen. So, you know, it's a good point. So, I mean, it's something that a lot of people are sensitive about. When we were raised in my family, Steve, and I was raised up as a child, and I have my grandson with me today, Nicholas Whipple. Nick, good morning to you. Can you just say good morning? Get up there to the mic.
Good morning, Grandpa. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. He's joining us. We're having what we call a Train Up a Champion weekend. But one of the things, Steve and Cool Whip, that we were always talking about, or grazed up, people didn't like to talk about money in our family. And I didn't quite understand why, even though that, you know, we were raised affluently. But at the same time, it's something that just was never talked about. And I think it's a subject that should be taught in school today, should be taught starting in junior high school, through colleges. It's something that people are lacking in, and you can just see it all over the place. I mean, the fruit thereof is that there's people always having financial struggles. And that's just something that is important to talk about. So that's why we're going to talk about it and making it relevant on the Radio Coffee House chat room. Again, my name is Robert Whipple. I'm your host. My guest is Steve Wisdom, certified financial planner. My grandson, Nicholas Whipple, and Cool Whip is in the studio, and we are glad that you're listening to us. So let's start off and talk about a little bit about money. How did you get involved in the financial world?
Well, back in 1981, I was living in Portland, Oregon, and don't hold it against me, but I had an uncle that lived down here, as you mentioned, Don Spear, and so he said, "Hey, this is a promised land," and I graduated from college, and wasn't a whole lot of opportunity back then. If you remember, go way back into 1981, interest rates for mortgages were about 15-16%.
Mm-hmm. I do remember that.
I remember seeing a CD at a it was called First Interstate Bank then. And it was a CD rate of 15% on a 1-year CD. And basically, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Paul Volcker, was going to whip inflation if it killed us, and it just about did kill us. They kept interest rates up so high, where we're at the opposite end, where they artificially suppressed interest rates for almost 10 years. The Federal Reserve has, but anyway, back then it was so high, and so there was just no opportunity for a lot of. Oregon was in a pretty severe recession, so I came down to Texas and started to hang out at Don's office. And
so that's over 30-something years.
37 years ago this May.
So you started hanging around Don Spear.
Right, and so his office, and a few weeks later, I had a degree in business, and I always enjoyed financial things. I could figure out things pretty quickly, and so anyway, he offered me a position, and so it was a very raw, very difficult first first year, but we survived it. And I just thank the Lord for that. But anyway,
we had a good mentor, which is, right. I think it's important.
Right. And so we went through that. And so I was with Don for 19 years and he sold the practice. And then he let me take my clients. And that's when I started up S Wisdom Financial back in the first of 2001. And so anyway, it was a long time ago and a lot of water under the bridge, but we're just grateful for what I did learn and at the time. And I think that we were officed on Dallas Parkway and you used to come over to our office for Bible studies on Thursday mornings.
Yeah, that's where
Mark and a lot of other guys were, Richard Galloway and some other fellows that
Wendell
were
Wendell Howie.
Yeah.
And so it was an amazing time at that time. And one of the things that I always remember, and we talk about mentors, Don Spear was definitely a mentor of mine. But Steve Wisdom, even though we were the same age, he became a mentor of mine. And the way he handled himself, the way he walked the talk. And I was always looking for people that would walk the talk. And it's something that you don't see a lot of anymore, that people, they can talk a good game, they can say a good thing. But here we had just come through, Nancy, this horrible financial storm. And Steve experienced some of that with us. And it's not fun. I mean, it's like it was hell on earth. And it was next to being like sick in your body. In fact, it would make you sick in your body. And there this light of hope was through Don Spear, Steve Wisdom. And we had this Bible study with quality-minded people. It was an amazing time. And it was good mentoring. It was a good mentorship. And Steve really helped me a lot. And I can just say thank you so much for everything that you've sown into my life, Nancy's life, into the lives that you've been a part of. Steve, you're an amazing young man, and that's why I definitely wanted to have you on the Radio Coffee House chat room. So I just wanted to personally say thank you very, very much for that.
Thank you, Robert. Your words are very kind. Now, that was such a long time ago, and I don't know anybody that didn't have some type of difficulty. They had their own businesses back in the 80s and early 90s. It was a tough time for a lot of people, but thank the Lord we're here today.
So what is the term CFP, Certified Financial Planner? What is that? What does that actually mean?
That is a professional designation that is after quite a bit of testing and classes, and there's also a lot of other reference and background checks and what have you that the Board of Standards for CFP issues your designation, and you also have to keep continuing continuing education and keep your hours up on making sure you've taken the right classes and the right courses and what have you. And so there's about 77,000, last I saw, there's about 77,000 CFPs in the world. And I reference that against maybe 450,000 securities brokers, which you're eligible to sell securities through a brokerage firm, but you're not necessarily a CFP. It's kind of like an accountant and a CPA. It's kind of, think of it kind of in that term in terms of the professional designation is it's a notch above.
So it's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a very big deal. And it's a big deal to keep it. And I'm so glad that I did it way back in the 80s. And I was actually awarded my designation in 87. And so I kind of took the long and winding road to finish all the classes and what have you. But I finished it and got it all done and stuff. But it's to me, it's kind of a notch. And to a lot of people, it's a notch above the average broker and what have you. And so it doesn't mean you everyone has to have it, because it's not an absolute requirement, but I'm glad I have it. And so just thankful for that.
So we have to take a commercial break, Steve, but I do want to just give you a little bit before we do that, inspiration, which I like. Everyone likes inspiration. We're going to kind of talk about money a little bit, but we're also going to talk about a story in the book, The Big Day. And so it says one morning, an extremely wealthy man, and you're going to like this, Steve, an extremely wealthy man was looking outside his window, which overlooked his magnificent estate, and he noticed one of his gardeners working in the orchard. He said to himself, "Wow, what wouldn't I give today to be that man working in the orchard and not have a problem or care in the world?" At the same time, the man in the orchard was looking up and saw the extremely wealthy owner peering out his window, and the gardener said to himself, "Wow, what wouldn't I give to be a wealthy man and have all his possessions?" Folks, I'm going to tell you, it's simply in your perspective. We'll be right back.
Greetings from the Big Day. Within a few short days, our newly published book became a bestseller in time management. How would you like to know how to plan for success? transform your weekends, and achieve your goals. Would you like to learn the secrets of turning the seemingly impossible vision you have for your life into a reality and even a legacy? Sometimes all it takes is learning how to utilize and combine both your visionary and your logical sides. And don't worry, we all have them both. But it shouldn't end there. How about using the four areas of mapping and the four areas of planning your time? This is just part of the blueprint for success. And the good news is you don't have to reinvent the wheel. With inspirational and practical strategies for these and many other topics, The Big Day is a life coach that will get you on track to win big in all eight areas of your life. The Big Day by Robert W. Whipple. Buy your copy on Amazon today.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. This cat makes me make art. He's always motivating me to draw pictures of him. He just is motivating artistically. He's my best friend, but a lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
Keyboard Cat, YouTube star and shelter pet. Amazing adoption stories start in shelters. Start yours today. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Radio Coffee House chat room. Here's your host, Robert W. Whipple.
Good morning again. My name is Robert Whipple, your host for the Radio Coffee House chat room. My guest today is Steve Wisdom, certified financial planner. And by the way, we're going to give you his information so you can get a hold of him. And we got so many good questions for him. And the hosts are in the radio studio is my grandson, Nicholas Whipple, and my wife, Nancy Cool Whip. Good morning again, everyone. So let's get back into this. And I want to ask you, I've got like 50 questions I've got to ask you, and I don't know if we can get to them all, but this is such good stuff. We've kind of set the foundation, Mr. Wisdom, for, you know, about a certified financial planner. So this is a question I'd want to ask, and I think it's a good question, is what should someone or people look for in a financial planner? Okay, so in other words, I decided I'm going to get help, and I hope if there's one thing I can sell you on today other than the big day, I can hope that you need a mentor, you need help. I don't care where you are, who you are, what position you're in, you need professional help. I mean, it's just like crazy why you wouldn't want to get professional help. So let's say somebody is in good shape, they're not in bad shape, or they're in bad shape, or they're in the middle, wherever they are. What should someone look for in a financial planner?
Well, the first thing, if you know somebody that has worked with one in the past and has had a good experience with them, that would be a good start. As far as a referral, that's always a good place to go. If the person's been responsible and done well for their clients, and also there's a regulatory website called FINRA Broker Check. FINRA is the regulatory agency that most security brokers have to adhere to as far as making sure to keep all their licenses and the requirements and what have you. And so you can actually check out the person that you might be talking to, and before you even go see them, get their name, get their the company they're with, and in most cases, it's fairly easy to find information about them. You can look at their history all the way back from what kind of licenses they hold, what type of employment history they've had. There's going to be disputes. I mean, customer disputes. You're dealing with people. You're dealing with money, yeah. And so there's a misunderstanding or whatever the case is. So there's going to be records of any disputes that are on there that are usually it's over a certain amount, or if it's a written notice and what have you. So those are on there. And so if the person has a lot of them, then chances are you may want to pass on that. But if they've got just a misunderstanding over something, it was the client thought one way and the advisor said they said it another way. Those happen. That's just mm-hmm. the way life is. And so that's a good start. But I think a referral would probably be the best place. And, you know, somebody that's been in the business for a while, and no one wants to be the very first client, although it had to happen sometime.
I mean, you don't want to go in your gurney and the brain surgeon says, good morning, you are my first.
You're the first, yeah.
You're the first.
First brain
doc, have you done this before? No, you're the first.
I mean, seriously. So get somebody that's been around, so what you'd say a good rule of thumb. And we don't want to, you know, I want to be careful because there are people getting in this business and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to rain on their parade, but I'm talking about these are things that you want to think about. You know, how long have you been in business? So I just can't say, okay, 5 or 10, 15 years, but just let you some wisdom there. But the other thing too is their philosophy. What is your overall philosophy? I would ask my financial planner, and what I'm going to do, and I like this, Steve, because it's going to be like an interview process, like a job. It's just like I'm not going to go in and say, take me to your leader. What I'm going to do is go in, and I'm going to ask several good questions. What is your philosophy? What is your track record? Do you have any complaints against you? Those are questions. And then the number of years you've been in business. Do you feel comfortable talking with that person? Does that person trying to talk like way over your head? You know, and when someone starts talking way over my head, I go, slow down, big boy, or slow down, whoever that is. I want to understand what you're saying, because, and I'm not in a rush. If I feel like they're rushing me, or they're, you know, like I'm an inconvenience to them, maybe they're not the best fit.
Right. There's certain situations that the chemistry just isn't there. It's just not gonna work. And so that's just the way it is. I mean, that's nothing personal, just business, just like they said in The Godfather. But but you know, just business, you know.
That's a little weird.
Well, anyway.
Don't be concerned.
But no, the there has to be a certain rapport between the advisor and the client. And also, a lot of people, they'll have pretty high expectations. They'll see some type of a return, or they'll hear about somebody that got into this investment and that doubled in 2 weeks or whatever. And nobody's going to talk about the thing that didn't work out for them. They're only going to talk about their gains and what have you. And to think that happens all the time is rather fruitless to even go there. Some people get into too big of a risk mode, and they just think that it's going to happen, and they'll something will turn on them, and they'll want to get out. And if they don't ever get back in, then it's really money that's is going to sit stagnant for years. And so you just have to, from what I've seen over the years, the steady, systematic plodding away is really the way to go. Now, once in a while, it takes some money, take a certain percentage of it, 10-15% or so. And if you want to do some high risk stuff, then you've isolated it over there, and you're not taking a big risk on the entire amount of your life savings or your retirement account and what have you. And so if that satisfies your itch for wanting to take a risk, and hopefully it works out for you, or it works out better than you thought. But some people forget the fact that there's a couple sayings in our business, and one of them is that trees don't grow to the sky continually, and they just keep on growing forever. Yes. Eventually something comes along, a windstorm, a fire, a disease, a blight or whatever. And so if you're in something and it does really, really well, then great, you know, God bless you. And that's wonderful to hear, but you better plan some type of an exit strategy, because eventually things are going to catch up with it. Over time, things somewhat revert to the mean to a certain degree. And so you better plan on getting out or protecting that gain. And so that's what we like to consider. You can do that through a number of ways. There's some strategies. There are certain investments that limit the upside, but they also limit the downside too. And so if you're going to look for a high rate of return, you're going to probably have to take a pretty decent risk in order to do that. If you're going to tone it back some, then you're going to have to be a little bit more satisfied with the type of returns. But having a consistent return and consistent value to your account is a pretty important thing to. And there's some clients of mine that have no interest in the stock market whatsoever.
Yes.
And they just don't want to do anything. Usually they've either lived through the Depression, that we're getting fewer and fewer of those people around, but they lived through the Depression, or their parents lived through it and they heard it across from the dinner table every night about, you know, save your money, be conservative, pay your bills on time and what have you, which is always good, and no matter when you were born. And so we have investments for that too, that they're guaranteed principal and interest. I don't guarantee it, but the big insurance company does. Yes. And so
and the other thing I like is that I really want to say this to you again. No matter who you are, what position you're in today, whether or not you're retired, whether or not you are at home and you don't have a, you know, don't have a penny that you can't put together a penny, no matter what position you're in, you need to start with where you are, and that is to get professional help. And interview that person, go through a process. You don't have to be in a rush. And the big thing I always say, Steve, is if it sounds too good to be true, it always is,
right,
the majority,
right,
of time.
Right.
And that's what you're basically saying. Just don't hop for the first one. So let's talk about the next subject question, as far as I'd like to get into, or what are common mistakes that, from your position, and this is something you've seen, I mean, just amazing. I'm sitting here looking at Steve and thinking about all the people he's seen and the mistakes that they make. So talk to our audience this morning and talk about some common mistakes some people make in your, what,
well,
you've seen.
Having too high of a risk factor, as far as wanting to get into too risky of an investment, could be penny stocks, which are technically, those are stocks below $5 a share, but really they're talking literally pennies for the stocks, and there's a reason why it's down at such a low price. Or new some type of new issue that is a private placement, which is, they're not publicly traded yet, but they hope to be someday, and they want you to have some seed capital in it. And so those are very risky investments because they typically don't have a track record, and it's, you just need to be careful of that. In my experience, and also people watching too many, looking at other people and looking at other shows and what have you, and thinking, "Well, gee, I can do that too." Well, if it was easy, everybody would do it. And so it just takes a little bit of discipline. It takes a little bit of deferred gratification. You have to put off, spending that money now in order to have that and more money later on in the future. So
okay, and then I think another area is what, trying to keep up with the Joneses. I think I like what you said.
Yes. We have such, in this day and age of all of our different social medias and our TV programs and what have you, people think, oh, I've got to have that type of car, or that type of, live in that type of house or what have you. And, it was 10 years ago, the housing crisis was pretty much going full bore, and they had so many people that were not really qualified for mortgages, but they were putting them in houses anyway. And so that all finished pretty bad. And so I think people are a little bit smarter now than they were back then. But and certainly the mortgage companies are too. They certainly want to make sure they don't go through that again. But, set your expectations for yourself and not trying to impress some other people. That's not a way to live.
My name is Robert Whipple, your host for the Radio Coffee House Chat Room. My guest today, Steve Wisdom, Certified Financial Planner. Steve, how would someone get a hold of you if they wanted to contact you and maybe just start a dialogue with you?
Just my website is swisdomfinancial.com.
And yes.
That's
S-Wisdom.
swisdomfinancial.com.
Okay.
A real creative name there, but
I like that.
Anyway, it's all my contact information is on there: email, phone number, everything. I'm right off of I'm right on Preston, just south of Beltline. So,
and so, give that website again:
swisdomfinancial.com.
Okay, swisdomfinancial.com. That's the way they can get a hold of you. Mm-hmm. That way, they can start a dialogue, and that's what we're talking about this morning: is building a financial budget, building a future, building a wise plan. Before we take a commercial break, I wanted to go back into the big day and, again, kind of go along with our theme, and that is winning big. That's what we're talking about, winning big in your finances. And if you ask me today, Mr. Whipple, what is your definition of winning big? I would say it's like a recipe, okay? It's like, has a lot of different layers. I would say winning big means that you're living a life of abundance, not just finances, but of joy, peace, patience, integrity, humility. Winning big means faith, kindness, mercy. Here's a good one: forgiveness, self-control, good health. And again, back to our theme today, Steve, financial stability, as well as uplifting and beneficial relationships in abundance. And this comes as a result of aligning yourself with good people, like a certified financial planner. This comes with using God's wisdom. And so that's what we're talking about, money today, on the chat room. We're glad you're with us, and we'll be right back after this commercial break.
Your alignment, your plan, your thinking, your disciplines, and your attitude. These are the first five of 11 cornerstones that Robert Whipple discusses in his best-selling book, The Big Day. The progress of your life is directly proportional to the direction, condition, and momentum of these five cornerstones. In other words, together, they make up the vehicle you use to advance in life. For this reason and many others, whether it's a push in the right direction or a jumpstart for a new day, The Big Day is your personal life coach to help you move on, move forward, and embark on the adventure of becoming a better you in all eight areas of your life. Don't wait to make the small changes that lead to a big difference. Order your copy of The Big Day by Robert W. Whipple on Amazon today.
If you're a single man under the age of 35, you'd probably like to know what the ladies are looking for on an online dating site. A guy who had a few drinks and later got pulled over for buzz driving. See, that could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. And doesn't a guy who's back living with his parents but calls them my roommates just scream, Mr. Right?
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Radio Coffee House chat room. Here's your host, Robert W. Whipple.
Well, my name is Robert Whipple, your host of the Radio Coffee House chat room, and my guest today, Nancy Whipple, my wife, 45 years, Steve Wisdom, certified financial planner, and my grandson, Nicholas Whipple. Nick, I think you said you had a question for us.
Yes, Grandpa, I did. For someone my age, 16, could you still like be in that financial area? Could you like start on that?
Hey, do you remember when you were 16, Steve?
I'm trying to forget, but yes. I think you got, and you could set up, or you could have your parents set up what's called a 529 plan, which is a plan for college education, typically through a mutual fund. You're too young to own a stock account yourself because I believe it's majority age here. I believe it's 18 in Texas for stock ownership.
That's a great question.
But you could have your parents set up a 529 plan, and that way you could start it yourself, or they could start. A lot of grandparents do it too, and so that's great for using it, the money for college education, as long as it's used for higher education purposes. And they're very broad and very spread out as far as what they refer to as that. And it can actually be it's any accredited school. That could be a technical school. It could be a other kind of college. It doesn't have to be a 4-year Ivy League type school at all.
Yeah.
And so you could have up to $250,000. You could contribute up to $250,000 into those. I know that's a lot of money, but typically when somebody's born, the grandparents and parents start to put money into those. And so those are good investments for toward college education, which a lot of people, or it's some type of education post high school. And so those work out. Those are nice to help defray some of the costs, and the gains are all tax exempt. There's no tax exempt. There's no tax on the gains as long as the money's used for higher education purposes.
Thank you, Nicholas. Great question. So,
thank you,
Steve. Let's talk about. Thank you, Nick. Hey, let's talk about your overall investment philosophy. I kind of came at this a different way, but I want to look at kind of, okay, I'm coming into your office, and I would say, okay, what is your philosophy, and what is that? Take that in layman terms and spend a few minutes and talk to me a minute about that.
I touched on it a few minutes ago about protecting the gains, making sure that we don't stay in something too long, which every broker is going to, every advisor is going to have some hall of shame or whatever you want to call it to say, oh, gee, I wish I would have done that differently and what have you. But for the most part, if you have a systematic, middle of the road type investment philosophy in terms of risk and in terms of what you're willing to do. There's a matrix chart that I always find amazing. A lot of mutual funds will send out, and what they'll show the last 10 years, and they'll show all the different categories of there's usually equity investing, and then there's bond investing, but I'll talk about equity investing here for a minute. They'll have a matrix, and they'll show the hottest performing sector that year, and then on the very top, and then it'll work its way down all the way to the bottom. There's usually about 10 different categories that they have. When I say sector, I mean international growth funds, domestic growth funds, asset allocation type funds, which are sort of a move as you go type investment, balanced funds, which would be a combination of high dividend stocks and high quality corporate bonds. Those are all different categories, and they'll be precious metal funds. There'll be all these different subcategories in the equity market. And usually, almost always the case, I can't say every time, but almost always the case, the hottest performing sector 1 year, if you look the next year, it's down toward the bottom. And so the ones that are in the middle are the ones that typically the balanced and the asset allocation types of investments are typically the ones that stay in the middle. And so you have a more constant 7%, 8%, 9% return. I'm just going from memory on something. It's not a guarantee or promise or anything, but it is something just from memory. And versus the hottest sector 1 year might have been 40%, and the next year they might have lost 25%. And so we try to, if you can keep it on an even keel, I think that's a lot. That's going to be a lot better for emotionally for the client and for the broker and the advisor in that situation. But knowing when to get out is also another, as far as if you want to hold on to some gains, or if you want to, this just didn't work out the way we planned. There was a problem with that, with a key customer. The company had a problem. That'd be on an individual stock. But the market does rotate. The market does have sector rotation for so long. Technology done so well in the past. It's been international investments.
Sherman Williams.
Well, yes, yeah, home building type related supply stocks and things like that. And so there's going to be rotation. Things don't stay in a particular category forever. I'm sure many people remember back in the late 90s, it was all about Y2K. It was all about technology. We were all going to be on the internet all the time. And we kind of got ahead of, people got ahead of themselves a little bit on that. And we are on the internet all the time now, but it's not anything, there was no such thing as Facebook. Google, I don't think existed. It was all Yahoo and America Online and all these other companies. And, things rotate out of sectors. Everyone talks about Amazon now. Well, 100 years ago, Sears was the Amazon of its time. And so things
That's
change
good.
Over time. And so you have to realize that. Now, that was a very long time period. But with technology, things can change pretty quickly. If you've got an outdated technology and there's not any real reason for somebody to hold on to it, then that company is probably going to have some issues going forward. And so we have to kind of make sure that that we're hopefully trying to stay ahead of the curve in terms of what sector, what area do we think is going to be a place to go to. And we have a saying in our business, and that is Wall Street's the only place that people run away from a sale. When there was a dip in price, people run from it. They get out of it. And another thing, too, is that people typically get in at the wrong time. If they do it themselves, they get emotional. They get all I'm going to make money. Look at this thing's gone up 50% in 3 months or whatever, and they think it's going to happen to them, and it could. But for the most part, when things are up, people jump in, and when things are down, people a lot of times will pull out instead of either do we need to average down on this, or is this something that we need to do? And if you try to sell something when it's way up high, people think it's going to continue to go up, and then that results in problems. So anyway, you can't go wrong making a profit. That's what Don used to always say, and so. That's sort of my philosophy too.
How do you get paid? How does a financial planner, or how does investment? How do we pay you?
We do like to get paid from time to time, and yeah. So it helps pay the bill.
Yes.
Helps take the edge off poverty.
It does.
And so most clients, a lot of our clients, we have what are called managed accounts, which 20 years ago that was really a very very. New thing. Now it's pretty much the standard, and that is instead of a traditional commission on a stock or on a mutual fund or some type of bond investment or whatever, we receive an asset management fee for the money in the account, and it's always thought of as on an annualized basis. And so it's anywhere from, for the very very large accounts, it's anywhere from 1% down to the for smaller accounts are 1.5%. And so the minimum is $25,000 on the accounts as far as the size to
yes.
To do that. And if it's below that, then we switch over to a typical brokerage account or a mutual fund. There's a lot of great mutual funds, and so they do have a sales charge associated with it, anywhere from, I don't know, it depends. Some of them are no load, some of them are up to 5.75%, but it's a one-time fee. but one-time sales commission. But that's the cleaner, going forward, the better way to go, we think, is through the asset management fee.
Yeah, and the thing I like about this is I don't want somebody working for free for me, because if they are, that means that something's wrong. There's an imbalance there. But at the same time, I want to get someone that's a professional that is not going to make $1 million off my one account, but at the same time that they're getting paid. So I think that's very, very important. And I think that's like something you need to investigate. Okay. And ask the financial planner or ask whoever you're working with is that, you know, what are your fees and how does that work? So let me kind of switch gears for just a moment. Let's talk about life insurance. So how many different types of life insurance are? I don't want to get in too much detail, but can you just take about 30 seconds to a minute and talk about life insurance?
Sure. You've got the whole life, which is you pay it for the rest of your life. You're guaranteed the coverage for the rest of your life. You've got universal life, which is a lower cost form of insurance. And there's a lot of lifetime guaranteed universal life policies. And then, of course, there's term insurance, which is there's a term, meaning there's a term time limit that you're going to have your premiums guaranteed level for a certain time period. The longest term insurance that I can remember seeing is 30 years, and that's up to about age 60. And then there's 25, there's 20, 15, 10. 10 doesn't really, it's better just to stay with 15. 10 doesn't really, it's not that much more than or less than the 15 year. But those are for situations. If somebody can't afford any whole life insurance, then and they can't afford universal, then term is better than nothing, better than not having anything.
So it's going to be dependent upon what they can, their financial situation.
Right, their financial situation. Also, think of a bell curve, and at the beginning of a person's marriage, they may not have any kids and what have you, and then they'll start to have a few kids, and then they're certainly, if something happened to the primary breadwinner, then, or either parent, it would be devastating from a financial standpoint because of the fact that all of a sudden you've cut off that source of of income. And so you want to try to get as much coverage for that as possible and have a plan. If something does happen to somebody, make sure you have a plan to what to do with that money. So many people get large amounts of lump sums of money, but they have no idea what to do with it. And I've seen this. It's, you try as hard as you can, but you can't get them to do what you want them to do. And by the time a couple years rolls by, most of it's gone. It's really sad to see that. People can handle streams of payment, but they can't handle big lump sums of money.
So here's another question I want to ask you, and we're going to just hit you with three or four questions. I'm going to hit one before the break, but talk to me about a home. I've always heard a home is a good investment. I've got my philosophy. Is a home really a good investment?
Well, I was in apartments up until I got married. My wife had a home when we got married, and I love living in homes. I'd rather if somebody's situation is going to make them where they have to move in a few years, you're probably better off renting. It would be too expensive to get into a home and then have to turn around and sell it in a couple years and all the costs associated with it and what have you. But I think from a marital standpoint, I think that really adds an additional element of stability, an additional element of foundation to the marriage.
Very, very good. What about paying off your mortgage? Should you pay off your mortgage early?
If at all possible, my personal opinion is yes, because I think that adds in another, even stronger additional element of stability to the family situation. That's just, I just cringed at people that would not have the opportunity to pay it off. They have an opportunity and they don't pay it off. I just really think it's much better to go ahead and not have that, and that it adds more stability to the marriage.
Folks, this last 15 minutes, it's going to be power-packed. You got to stay tuned. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Robert Whipple, and we'll be right back after this commercial break.
Hi, this is Jill with the newly released book, The Big Day, and I've got one power-packed word for you, thankfulness. Have you ever thought that thankfulness could be the winning game changer you've been needing in your life? Far from cliche, thankfulness is a valuable paradigm shift that can take your life from basic to above and beyond. As just one of the 11 cornerstones from our best-selling book, The Big Day, you'll discover why thankfulness makes a bigger impact than you'd think. Learn how thankfulness can put the odds of winning in your favor. The Big Day is your personal life coach, offering key concepts and tools to help you reach a consistent level of excellence and fulfillment in every area of your life. And thankfulness is just one of those game-winning strategies. The Big Day by Robert W. Whipple. Buy your copy on Amazon today. That's The Big Day by Robert W. Whipple.
It may be hard to believe, but people just like you are already saving money. FeedThePig.org makes it easy. Their simple savings plan teaches you how to start saving without going overboard, so you don't need to sell all your belongings and live in a commune.
These dungarees belong to all of us now, Tom.
You don't need to get a second job as a stuntman.
We need a new stuntman!
You just need FeedThePig.org. Don't get left behind. Get tips and tools at FeedThePig.org. Brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Radio Coffee House chat room. Here's your host, Robert W. Whipple.
Buckle your seatbelts. The last 15 minutes, the Radio Coffee House chat room. My guest is Steve Wisdom, certified financial planner, Mrs. Whipple, my wife for 45 years, and my grandson, Nicholas Whipple. Good morning to you. Mr. Wisdom, question, should I buy or lease a car, or what's better?
Well, the answer is it depends. Some people, in my case, my wife and I, we keep our cars for, 16, 17 years.
How long have you had
years,
your car?
Since October of 2004, and it's a Toyota Sequoia.
That's brand new, too.
Well, thank you. I changed the...
I bet it's paid off, isn't it?
Oh, it's been paid off for years. Synthetic oil, just try to keep it in the garage, keep it under... I have a big office parking garage, so I keep it out of the weather and what have you. But if... it's the first brand new car I ever bought. And so my wife had her car. She bought hers used, but it was, I think she had it for about 13, 14 years. But if you're in a business that you need to have to, you know, drive around and what have you, and sometimes it's the only way you can afford a, the car you want is to lease it. But again, there's probably a lot of car people out there that don't want to hear this, but I keep my car for a long time because cars are they're built so much better now than they were, say, 20, 25 years ago. Then they had to compete and had to build them better. And so if you take care of it and maintain it and keep it in good condition, you got to spend some money every now and then. That's all. I'd rather spend $500-$600 every year or so over at my mechanic, Tony Joe's place. Then
is he still in business?
Oh yes, he's doing. Yeah, he's very doing well. But anyway, I'd rather spend $500-$600 there for. I mean, some new brakes every few years, or some hoses and belts, and maybe a new timing chain every 100,000 miles or so, than to have to cough up $600-$800 every single month. And so that's just
for the
me
next
personally.
50 months or 60
yeah,
months.
Yeah, whatever. I never had to figure out why you pay sales tax on a, I guess Ed Wallace can answer that for us, on a lease. you're leasing, you don't own it, but you still end up stuck with the sales tax. That's kind of a sad thing to me. But anyway, it just depends on your situation. Sometimes people have corporations that will allow them a per diem for so many dollars a month for a car. And sometimes, you know, people may want to lease the car then. But anyway, it's just it's a personal, very personal preference. Cars are a very emotional decision, so that's a real it's a real sensitive area with a lot of people.
Do I need a will?
Oh yeah, I'm not a lawyer. I don't want to be a lawyer, and I don't hold myself out as one. But I think everybody that's over the age of say 21 or so needs to consider.
Over the age of 21, you need a will.
I would think so, because my experience in the past has been even single people. I had a client whose son was tragically killed on a beautiful Saturday morning about 16 years ago. At 8:30 in the morning, on the way to a prayer meeting, he was killed by a drunk driver at 8:30 in the morning on a Saturday. And so we had to prove to the court. I say we, the family had to prove to the court that he had never been married and he didn't have any children. And he didn't have a will, so that really made things. It cost a lot of money to have to do all this additional legwork to be able to prove to the court that, you know, this is who he is and what have you. And so. If we'd had a will, it would have simplified things. But it really takes care of a lot of issues. From what I've been told, the courts in Texas are very streamlined. If everything is done properly, then the judges just don't fool around. They get right down to it. And especially if you have children, if something happened to both parents, then the guardianship of the children would be really paramount. And so you really need to include that in there, because if you don't have a will and something happens to both of you, then the state of Texas will step in and they're going to figure out who they think is best for the children to be raised. And also, you have blended families. We have many blended families out there, and you have somebody died or there was a divorce, and now you've got somebody else and there's children, and so that the will would clarify who gets what and who's entitled to what and what have you. So that really it's in writing, so it would be held up by the court. I mean, it would be enforced by the court.
One other piece of financial advice that I would give, not for myself, but from my attorney, John Mazzell, shout out to him this morning, great attorney. Been working with him for probably close to 20-something years. And he would say also, Steve, is that if your financial situation changes, even to a degree of less or more retirement, you always need to revise your will. So the revision, so first is to have a will, and second is to revise it. And this is his advice this is what he's shared with us several times. And this is, again, no matter what stage or area of life that you're in, that this is where you need to start. So if I don't have any money, let's say I'm in a position that I'm not in the right position, I've not made good choices, I haven't applied myself, and I'm going, today is my big day, I'm going to start doing things differently. Where's a good place to start, in your opinion?
Well, it's very easy. Just start with whatever you think, whatever you can afford. If it's $10 a week or $20 a week, then start there. But I think the first place a person really needs to look in order I consider this found money, and that is many employers have retirement plans, whether it's a 401k or a simple IRA and what have you, and you've got employer matching, where they will match. Usually it's up to 2 or 3% of what you put in. The first 2 or 3% you put in, they'll match that money going into the retirement plan. That's a 100% return on your money. That's not a promise. That's a legal fact, that if the employer matches the money, you're going to get, you put the money in, they're going to match it too. So that's like
brilliant.
That's like found money. I would encourage everyone to look at their employer's retirement plan, that they have one. If they don't, talk to them about maybe starting one. For small businesses, there's what's called a simple IRA, which has you have either a 2 or 3% matching on that. Depends on the way you set it up, but that's for very small accounts. And then most larger corporations typically have a 401k. If you're with a nonprofit like a church or a hospital, then it'd be a 403b plan. And so usually there's some type of matching, and it's designed to encourage people to save, but also to keep people happy, the employees happy. You want to have happy employees as an employer.
So just, Whip, take about 1.5 minutes and tell them about the story that brings in what Steve was talking about, the matching funds.
Yeah, because you were talking about even if you don't have very much money. So, like we said, we didn't have very much money. So my office, they said, you know what, we're going to start this 401k. And what we're going to do is the first year we'll match you every dollar you put in. We'll match you 25 cents.
And she didn't tell me about it.
And then the next year is 50 cents, the next year 75, and the next year is dollar per dollar.
And she didn't tell me about it.
So,
you're on a need-to-know basis, Robert.
Yes, yes. And so the very first year I didn't do it because money was really that tight. So the next year I thought, well, the least I could put in was $25. So and I got paid twice a month. So I took $12.50 out. Talk about a small amount. And they matched me a quarter per dollar. And then, you know, the next year I did a little bit more. And then I got up to where I was given the max I could. And then they were matching me dollar per dollar.
And it started growing and growing. And look where it is today. And it's an amazing thing. So, Steve, we are out of time. I want you to take just about a minute or so and just talk to people out there about their finances. And what would you say that would just be something that you feel I could share from you?
Well, from a practical standpoint, know how much money you're spending each month. I like to set up a quick Excel spreadsheet on my computer. Just about everybody would have some type of access, either at work or at home on a spreadsheet like that, where you can, I know what the some of my bills are coming in, I'm going to have to pay each month, so I put that down there. And then there's always going to be a few extras, but at least have an idea what to expect, and then look at your income. And of course, we want to have more income than we have expenses. And so people not knowing where all their money's going is really one of the biggest problems I've seen. People don't have any idea what their cable bill is, or what their telephone bill is, or what their other things that are more recurring type bills. So I would dig down and find out exactly how much you're spending, but also have a plan to be able to pay off some debt, pay off the whether it's an automobile or it's a home or what have you. I think that would certainly be a worthwhile project, and celebrate when you make pay off something. Just have a little celebration. Don't spend too much where you end up going back into debt again, but have a little celebration so you reward yourself for the and start at the small stuff and work your way up.
Especially if you have a job that's on commission, you want to try to get some cash,
right?
Like 3 to 6 months.
Right. You want to have on commission. If you're on a steady salary type paycheck, you might be able to get by with less than that. But as far as the backup money on commission, because they may be few and far between, but hopefully it'd be large commissions that come in. Have about 5 to 6 months living expenses, not income necessarily, but expenses. If it takes $4,000 a month for you to live on, then try to build up enough savings to where you can tap into that maybe a 3 or 4 or 5 times that.
So, Steve, thank you so much for joining us. We are so thankful for you. And I'm just going to hit you with the bottom line. I normally like to cap off with this, but your bottom line is just this simple. Get professional help. Build a budget. You got to have a budget. I don't care who you are. You need to have the right kind of insurance, auto, home, life, medical. You need to try to put some cash in the bank, have at least 3 to 6 months living expenses. Spend 30 minutes to an hour a week going over your finances. Invest some time into your own life. Read books about finance. Learn about, I think, one of my best books or favorite books, The Millionaire Next Door. I love that. Very practical. The Big Day talks about finances. And then finally, tithe. I think that's probably biggest thing I would share today is you got to start tithing.
Right.
Tithe is basically, it's not something that you have to do. It's something you want to do.
Right.
And it's just big time. And I think that's critical. And I think it's a starting place at 10%. This is Easter weekend. I want to just say thank you to my Lord and Savior for what you've done for us. And we celebrate this Easter weekend. And we just are so thankful for so many blessings. And we're thankful to have the opportunity to be here. We appreciate you listening this morning. It's been a great show. Thank you, everyone. And we'll see you next week on the Radio Coffee House Chat Room.
When your alarm goes off in the morning, do you hit the snooze button? If so, you've probably fallen prey to the acceptable norm, thinking that today is just a normal day. Well, good news, it's not. Today is full of opportunity. Why limit the potential of a perfectly good day that could change your life for the best? We often sell ourselves short when we look at each day as if it's as normal as all the others. We even have to peel ourselves out of bed sometimes because we lose the vision of the adventure and untapped potential ahead of us, and even within us. But the truth is, each day is something to get excited about. Think of what your life would be like in 1 year if you woke up every day like it was Christmas morning. As a personal life coach, let our new book show you how to turn an average day into the big day. It's time to beat your alarm to the punch and wake up ready for the success that awaits you. The Big Day by Robert W. Whipple. Buy your copy on Amazon today.
The preceding program was furnished by The Big Day, who is responsible for its content.
KLIF Dallas. KSCS FM HD2 Fort Worth.
KLIF.com.
A Cumulus station.